Game of Thrones podcast, Game of Thrones, and Zach cannot control his excitement.
We're still brand new, even though
we're five episodes in. We are brand new.
We still got that new car smell.
Mm.
Yes. Mm. The new car smell is intact. Now, Selena's not with us this week, believe that or not.
It's an all-boy show.
We are all here to digest and digress over the latest...
Oh, God, that's perfect. Keep going.
Right? We are all here to digest and digress over the latest Game of Thrones episode. It was episode 4, Garden of Bones. Mm-hmm. So, without further ado, mm-hmm. I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Terrence Pinkston.
Excellent. And guys, okay, so episode 4, what did you guys think?
Man, it was pretty good.
It's starting to get really good.
It was a good TV show. I thought it was a very quality television program. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, I mean, especially at the, we'll get to that. At the end.
No, let's, don't.
All right, we're not going to go. Yeah, of course, we're going to go in order, but still, I mean, I'd
obviously
have to say,
that's the most fresh on our mind, the ending.
Right.
The crazy, crazy ending of last night's episode. We're recording on Monday, so we can say, hey, last night's episode. But yeah, I've watched it. I've actually watched the episode twice now. And I just have to say, there are moments that really make me uncomfortable, and moments that really make me excited, and they make me sweat.
Well, Eric, let's hear about the moments that make you excited and that make you sweat. Let's hear about those.
we'll go through scene by scene.
Okay.
But meeting the 13, for instance, I was sweating it over that. I didn't know what they were going to do to Daenerys and her people. How can it be a Garden of Bones? How do bones grow?
Milk.
Milk.
You water a Garden of Bones with milk? That's awesome.
Yeah. But I really liked this episode a lot. I thought that you really got a feel for a lot of different parts of the story that they're trying to tell this season. And we didn't have any of Daenerys in the last episode. We finally went back to her. And, you know, the other area on the map that we were introduced to was Harrenhal. And I thought that they did such an awesome job from, would you call it a CGI standpoint? It's supposed to be like this ruined castle that was completely demolished by dragons at one point. And when they get there, were you sweating during that scene, Eric? Because that was a pretty ominous scene as they come up to this castle.
Yeah, I was sweating. Ever since the last episode, they mentioned Harrenhal and how it was cursed. Because Tyrion said that, Littlefinger could have it for brokering the marriage. But, I was sweating. And definitely that entry line by, you know, the children, what melts stone? Well, dragons do. And I was just thinking, oh, snap, this is like what we can look forward to coming from Daenerys' end when the dragons grow up. More places like this popping on the map.
What do you think of that map, though? I mean, it's a pretty cool map. I kind of wait every week to see what new place we're going to and how they actually construct it on that map.
Yeah. I still don't know how, because what I really want when this is all over is a huge interactive map it would look like a Rube Goldberg machine. In fact, that's kind of what it looks like, where all these little gears are turning and these little things are spinning. And obviously the towns, each city springs up. You know, I would like an interactive Game of Thrones map or a board.
Didn't you want a birthday cake like that?
Right.
Yeah, but I know that was short notice, so I'm not going to hold you guys to that.
Wait, Eric, before you go on, listen. Let's all just take a moment and appreciate that 24 years ago today, Eric was brought into this shiny planet that we call Earth. Can we just give him just a moment of, should we cheer or pat him virtually on the back?
Well, thank you, guys. I feel the warmth from here. And let me assure you that my entry into this world was nothing like the entry that we experienced last night watching that.
That was
birth.
More of an exit.
Yeah.
Well, the warmth you're feeling is actually just because you're sweating again.
Right, Eric, you're sweating.
Yeah, all those darn scenes, I'm telling you. So moving on then from the opening credits, which gave us a little bit of a guess as to what's in store, there was some wolf action quite early on in this episode. The dire wolf.
There was some farting, too. We were talking about this before the show.
This scene was one of the more graphic scenes that we've seen, I guess, even in the history of the show, with the small intestines and stuff hanging out at the end, at the end of that little battle sequence right there that we actually didn't see. But, you know, it's, I don't know. This show loves to push the envelope, don't they?
Well, especially later on in the episode, I'm telling you. But, yeah, I mean, the disemboweled guy and the battlefield in general.
What I like about this, though, is that, you know, if you read A Clash of Kings, you don't see anything from Rob's perspective. And you just hear about what's going on with him through the other characters that you're reading about. Here, because he's such a big character and was in season one, you know, you have to kind of follow along with him. And you're actually seeing things on screen that readers don't necessarily get to experience in the books. So I think that's kind of unique. I'm sure they went to George R. R. Martin to kind of get his input for exactly what's happening and what's going on.
So basically, I mean, the show is not making stuff up, or it is because they're writing scenes that were only ever implied or shown, you know, or overheard, you know, stories, as opposed to what's being given in the first person view of the narration of the book, right? So, and the other thing is, as a TV show, they're keeping track of the main characters, you know?
Well, it's less about keeping track of characters and less about, okay, well, Rob is a big guy here so in the show as opposed to the book, so we need to do X and Y for him. It's more of they have to dissect a giant block of text that was not fashioned in any stretch of the imagination to be fitted for TV, so they need a rising and falling action set up every single week that the show is out in each episode, so they have to add stuff and they have to make certain characters bigger, not because they want to, but just because inside of the realm of writing for television, they have to give someone a main character to follow, even though technically we don't necessarily have a main character. Our main character was sort of killed last season, and our new main character, I guess, would sort of be Tyrion, but they've added so much time onto Rob that they had to go, you know, deep into this battle. And I thought it was really great because, you know, we're getting to see a lot more of Grey Wind than really the book talks about, because like Micah was saying, it's not we don't have much from Rob's perspective. Like, we're borrowing from all of these sort of implied things, and we're sort of getting to see it live. So, for example, the romance, the little hint of budding romance we saw just after the dude got his foot cut off on the field with Rob and the super hot doctor girl in the wagon, that's not in the book, but it's added to not make Rob seem better, because that's not really what they care about. They just want to add more drama to the show, and, you know, romance does it, right? Or at least a little bit of it.
Right.
They are pulling in pieces of A Storm of Swords, because that's really where you get back into the flow of things with Rob, where you get back into the flow of things with Jaime also, because Jaime really takes off most of a Clash of Kings and then comes back into the fold at the beginning of Storm of Swords. So you have these huge characters, kind of like what Zach was talking about, where it doesn't work for TV to not have them on the show for an entire season. You just can't do that.
Right.
So they're giving them stuff to do, or just showing them doing what they were doing, even though it wasn't mentioned in the book.
Well, think about the characters that are in the main focus in the book. We have, like, Daenerys, we have Arya, you know, Sansa, Catelyn, like, I'm thinking of all Tyrion, all these people that have chapters, for example. That's how the books are parsed out. That people that read the books they say, oh, okay, well, they have chapters. So you're reading and you see a Daenerys chapter in front of you, like, oh, I got to read it because I love Daenerys, right? So they have these characters that are made important to you. Well, Rob doesn't have that many. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, Micah, but he doesn't have, I mean, he has like virtually no chapters in the second and third books, right? I mean, it's pretty low.
I don't think you ever see the story from his perspective.
That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, I haven't completely read, like, I'm not as far as Micah, but it's just funny that they have to do this. But I mean, they have to do it for TV, because let's think about this. As far as drama in a television show goes, and the main storylines of these characters, if we rallied around the same people that Martin's rallying around in his novels, we're going to see Arya's story, Sansa's story, Catelyn's story, Tyrion's story unfold so quickly, because they need to fill episodes each week, that we're going to have the show caught up to the books in like a season and a half. So they have to fill it in with other stuff, you know?
Well, that's interesting that they can even do that. I mean, Rob doesn't have any, you know, any chapters in the book, as you guys were just saying, but it's like you can tell his story. You can know his story just as much as you know, or just as well as you know, Catelyn's or Arya's, because of the different characters interacting with them. And I think that's a really neat element that the that Martin incorporates into the books, and I think it's great to see it on the screen.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing, though. We were talking in an email chain earlier today with Selena and all of us, and we were talking about some things they added. Like, they added the Talissa from Volantis thing with the hot chick, and that's her name. She's the hot chick in the back of the cart, and she's supposed to have – what's the girl's name that Rob's actually supposed to have romance with, dude, Micah?
Isn't it Jane Westerling?
I think so. I'm not exactly positive, but it's pulling away from that thing, and it's also – The deal with Arya that we'll discuss later in the episode, the way her story turns is also different from the book. But I do not, by any stretch of the imagination, think it's a bad thing. Now, I'm also the same guy that when the Potter books were adapted to film, got mad when anything was changed. But,
yeah.
Right? But in this case, I feel like the writers, you know, Brian Cogman, et cetera, they're doing a really, really great job of taking this great story, and it's the same thing that Jackson did with Lord of the Rings, and which is a lot how Game of Thrones is written, which is a lot how Ice and Fire is written. They're taking this deep sort of, I don't even know, not biblical, but the style that it was written, they're taking this deep literature and they're turning it into Hollywood. They're turning it into something that's candy that you can just take it each week and chew on it. It's delicious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, to give an idea real fast, I mean, with A Clash of Kings, if you're reading the book, you see it from the perspective of 9 different characters. And you don't see it from, for example, as we mentioned, Rob's or Jaime's. You don't see it from Stannis's. You don't see it from Renly's. So there are 4 main characters right there that we just threw out that you're not seeing from their particular perspective, but they are obviously huge characters in the series and in this particular season.
I mean, if you don't see it from the point of view of Stannis or Renly, and I'm about to read the books. I got them for my birthday, so I'm going to read them all, starting with the first. If you don't see it from Stannis or Renly's, how do you get their story? Whose point of view is it from?
Well, here you go. Here's the list. You hear from Maester Cressen, which is the guy who gets killed on Dragonstone by Melisandre at the very beginning.
Oh.
You see from Tyrion's perspective, from Catelyn's, from Ser Davos, from Sansa, Arya, Bran, Jon Snow, Theon, and Daenerys. So think about all the other characters that there are whose perspectives you don't necessarily see from.
I'm just looking forward to a Craster perspective, you know what I'm saying? I bet that's I bet that's fun-filled and exciting.
I do not want to see that. I don't think that'll be fun-filled at all. It depends on your definition of fun, I guess. But, okay, so finally, before we move on from this opening scene, there was this comment made by the guards to each other that I really wanted to bring up when I was watching the show. Okay, so they're talking to each other, and basically about how the Knight of Flowers is, basically a formidable warrior. And the guard says, well, he's been stabbing Renly for years, and Renly's still alive. Okay, ha 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 ha. How do they know that? Is that not – I don't want to say my heart broke, but I'm just saying that's unfortunate that everybody knows, or at least that these presumably unimportant guards know Renly's deep secret.
Well, is it just me, but I thought that Renly was the one doing the stabbing.
Yeah, it would seem that way.
Well, Eric, look at his crown, man. He's got a very, very pretty crown. I'm just saying, it's very nice. I think that they're sending
it fits his head very well.
Interdepartmental memos to everyone.
Remember, it's never overtly apparent, I don't think, in the books. I mean, there's talk of it, obviously. For the show's purpose, there's obvious they could clearly, you know, do more with it. And I don't think that this scene even existed in the books. I mean, this is just something that they made up. Again, remember, the Rob's attacks are only heard about. So the fact that you have 2 guys talking about Renly pounding Loras or Loras pounding Renly, I mean,
I don't think
just
that you said pounding, but
stabbing. Yes. They said stabbing.
Thank you for the visual,
that's
Micah.
That's okay. You use your own interpretation. That's fine.
The gossip goes around the same as it does. I'm assuming with Rob's victories, you know what I'm saying? Like, how the hell does Joffrey know how good Rob's destroying shit? Well, someone's telling him. So people are obviously just chatting about.
Okay, so Joffrey in this episode, guys. But basically, he's about to kill Sansa, or he's about to seriously maim his wife-to-be. This is not intelligent by any stretch of the imagination. It's not that it's not diplomatically correct, like Tyrion would argue, okay? This is just stupid. This is just absolutely the dumbest thing that character could possibly do, because Sansa already hates him. You know, she's going to be in his bed, you know, have clear view to poison him one day. It's already been prearranged. Why would you ever want to turn somebody who is that close in proximity to you against you so very obviously? Like, it's how is she supposed to like him? Because it's her duty? Like, that's bullshit. Like, anybody would know that she would not be loyal to him if he keeps doing those things to her.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And correct me if I'm wrong, but in the book, it's a lot worse. I mean, she has much less clothing than what she did in the show. It just shows who he is as an individual. And, you know, Jack Gleason does an unbelievable job portraying this absolute piece of shit king that nobody likes, has any feelings for whatsoever.
Yeah, they do a really great job of painting Joffrey as being an insufferable little shit. Listen, Tyrion brings in Bronn, right?
Yes.
Tyrion brings in Bronn, but it was so sweet because homeboy in the Kingsguard was like, hey, you can't talk that way to the king. And he's like, listen, I realize that he's the king. I understand that. But he's also my nephew, and I'm trying to talk to him and be like an uncle. So chill for a second, you ass bag. Cool cape. I like your cape. And then he goes, hey, you don't talk that way. You're an imp. And he goes, Bronn, if the dude talks again, just kill him and shit. It was perfect.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, but what happens later then with Tyrion, what with Joffrey and the whores? This scene, I don't think should have been in the episode, or they should have cut it a lot quicker than they did. It just made me all kinds of uncomfortable. I could barely get through it. I know we've seen so much in this show. HBO's pushing the envelope here, but this was just... I guess anybody can make the case that any of those other scenes that were raunchy were distasteful, but I think this scene, more than all of the others, was allowed to go on too far and for too long. I don't know if you guys would agree.
What about it, Eric, that really disturbed you? Just the overall demanding nature of Joffrey towards the two whores, or was it the actual physical contact between the two whores?
Well, it's the torture. It's the torturous situation, essentially, where Joffrey is making, you know, commanding a whore to strike another whore, and you know, basically, you know, gun to her head, you have to do this or I'll do it. I didn't think it was furthering the character. We really didn't, after that first few slaps when he hands his leather pouch or belt.
Come on, Eric.
You know,
Roz
to the
and Daisy,
whore.
They have names. They're not just whores.
They are
I read
people
the books,
too.
Micah. When I read the books,
they're not
Micah,
in the books.
Sure.
They're not in the books.
Oh, they're not in the books. Okay, Oz and Daisy.
Roz.
Roz and Daisy.
Micah, Eric watches Look. With one eye when he watches the show.
And one hand.
I agree with you to a certain degree, man. Because, like, I mean, definitely, it's not good. It's not like I know anyone that would watch that and be like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. I don't think it was terrible, though. I mean, like, this is Game of Thrones. This is a show where people die. Just last week, a guy crouched over a 13-year-old kid who was shot in the leg with an arrow and was asking to be helped. And he slowly stuck a knife through his throat and then pulled it out slowly. And then, like, 12 guys laughed about it. I mean...
Okay, but I'm going to call that character development, though, because we learn about the kind of men...
No, Jailer was not an important character, though. That was not character development. That was painting the scene. That was saying, all right, hey, this is how ruthless these people are. Shit is about to get crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. But did the scene last night with Joffrey and Roz and Daisy really add to his character?
Absolutely.
Especially, did it have to go on for as long as it did with the what was the Bannister? I mean, what did, what did he do
to be
to
honest
her?
With
the,
you,
the
I didn't
staff?
Think that she was going to hit her with it. I thought she would do something else with it.
No, I watched it and I thought that she was asking her to beat the other one to death with it, and that they were like, okay, you have to kill her or I'll kill both of you. And like, I thought that was going to be a show of, you know, making someone else get crazy and someone else get primal because they were scared of their own death, which is a torture tactic as well. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it was that terrible, and it wasn't, the scene wasn't for character development necessarily. It wasn't developing Joffrey's character necessarily. It was showing that Joffrey also wanted to play the game, and he wasn't just going to sit idly. I mean, because Tyrion did cross the line. Joffrey is the king. Tyrion did walk in there, and he did say some shit that he shouldn't have said to the king, and he walked out with the subject the king was messing with in front of the entire royal court and a whole bunch of guards. Not cool. Joffrey didn't do anything because Joffrey's scared of Tywin, obviously. So they had to show Joffrey's only retaliation to Tyrion, which is, hey, I'm going to mess these whores up that you picked out, and that's going to be my message to you. Like, I'm not going to go crazy and say shit in the middle of the court, but I am going to do shit in the back just to show you that I'm pissed.
But that, I mean,
I guess part of what made me uncomfortable too was that we see Tyrion later on in the episode, but we don't see his reaction. And earlier on, you know, I mean, Joffrey said, we're going to drag her corpse to my uncle. You know, we're gonna, you know, he's gonna see this. But even though we saw him later, we didn't see his reaction.
But why would that even bother Tyrion? I mean, a whore's a whore, and I mean, that's it.
Well, Roz and Daisy, Roz and, you know, one of them was Roz and one of them was Daisy, and one of them probably didn't make it out of that room alive.
But I mean, Terrence is right though. I mean, these royals. I mean, let's look at Renly and Stannis. They had a small bickering argument with their sitting there with their sigils, right? Just they were bickering like brothers, and they were saying, okay, well, if you don't agree with me, we will battle. Knowing good and well, neither of them are going to have to kill anyone, but there will be 40,000 people die tomorrow because of them bickering. It's just a small thing to them. Death to the royals is a small thing.
But I think Tyrion is also, I mean, he's protecting Sansa because I think in some ways he actually feels bad for her. He absolutely hates Joffrey. I mean, he loathes his nephew. There's no question about it. And I think that, like Zach was saying, you see this disdain that Joffrey has for Tyrion as well. And the only way that he knows that he can get back at him is by, you know, he makes sure he asks the question, you know, my uncle sent you? Because he knows that whatever he does to these two women is, in a way, him trying to act out against his uncle. And I mean, Zach was right. He completely embarrassed him in front of the whole court. I mean, he took the one member of the Kingsguard and absolutely imp-slapped him back and forth across the face, you know, telling him, do you see what the true meaning of a threat is? Or you know, like, I forget the exact words, but...
Yeah.
It was just...
And Bronn is just a badass. I mean, and he was the one who suggested the horrors for Joffrey in the first place, saying that he was stuffed from neck to navel or something like that.
It might be nice to get a little bit of that evil out.
Next big scene, Baelish goes to the Renly camp and speaks with both Renly and Margaery when he's there. I don't know. It was interesting to see Baelish outdoors because usually he's in some, you know, passageway in a castle. So it's good to see him getting some traveling on.
I can't see Baelish without seeing you because of our album art. I can't.
You know what? I hadn't seen it until this episode either, and I was just watching it. And I was like, yeah, he kind of looks
like
me.
He's walking around, and I'm like, oh, shit, Eric's up to something.
Well, Eric had this kind of little Baelish stash and little Baelish beard going on, little baby Baelish beard going on.
Yeah,
he finally plucked that off the other day. So
Baelish walks in. Renly's like, "Hey, dude. So you're a dick, and I don't like you, but you came all this way, so you probably have some shit that I probably want to hear about, so you can say it, and then please get out of the tent because I don't like you, and I'm looking forward to the Knight of Flowers visiting my tent this evening."
I guess Baelish isn't intense, his type of guy.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, I guess not. Must be that the facial hair.
It's interesting because they have that exchange where I'm guessing that he asked permission to speak to Catelyn because he tells Renly that, you know, you can either attack King's Landing with the doors barred or the gates open.
That was swag. That was a really cool moment. That's the perfect thing to say to someone who's about to sack a city, like, hey, listen, man, do you want opposition or you just want to come right in? I didn't see that one coming. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was good. That was a top moment.
It bothers me. That bothers me so much that he can't be trusted.
I mean, it's really easy to hate Baelish, and I do, and I totally dislike him as a character and as a person within the show, but it's just, you can't deny that he's just doing some good shit.
What about when Baelish finally does get to talk to Catelyn? What did you guys think of this? Because this is actually super important, because he's asking her to kind of make a decision over Rob, over her son.
I was so pissed off.
Yeah, Baelish makes me...
Why were you angry that he had the nerve to ask it, or what?
No, I was pissed off because, I mean, Baelish, she doesn't know this for sure. She can ascertain. Sure as hell she can ascertain. But Baelish was the reason. I mean, Ned made some dumb decisions, but Baelish was the guy who turned the City Watch against Ned when they were supposed to be on his side. It was him who made the call. He was the one that fucked Ned. So, I mean, he's walking into Ned's wife's tent, and he's like, "Hey, girl, what up?" And she's like, "Get out of here. I've got this dagger, bro."
But she pulled a knife on him, you know, like you just said. And I thought that was awesome. But it was only after he brought up her love for her daughters that she was able to drop that knife. But, I mean, that line that he said right before she attacked him, "I have always loved you. Like, I've loved you since I was a little boy." Like, I did not expect that from Baelish. Obviously, it's true. We've seen that in the first season, you know. But he was just very candid with her, and she was very candid with him with a blade.
Right.
So, I don't know. That was just a very testy relationship.
It just makes me sick that Baelish says that both daughters are healthy and they're alive and they're this and that. And
he's giving hope to an old woman, but to the mother who hasn't heard any word about her. I mean, the fact is it's a lie because we know Arya is not in kind. Like, nobody – are we really meant to believe that somebody who Baelish knows that Arya is alive and well?
I mean, and are we really meant to believe that two Stark children in the hands of Lannisters are healthy? Come on. Yeah,
well, he wasn't saying anything to make her feel better. He was just looking for a bargaining piece. That's it.
Okay, but then...
he's just trying to stir some shit up. That's what he does. He take the attention off yourself and then rise to the top when the stuff's done.
He's trying to play the Game of Thrones. I mean,
right.
You look at what he's able to do. You know, he's leveraging a mother's love for her daughters so that he can go back to Tyrion and possibly have Jaime in his back pocket on his way back to King's Landing. And,
right.
You know, if he's able to secure that, I mean, that makes him, puts him in pretty good position. You know, both with Catelyn in some respects, even though she's probably never going to forgive him for what he did to Ned, but also with the Lannisters, and it protects him at King's Landing, you know, because of what he's been able to do.
To answer your question, Eric, he doesn't know that Arya is at Harrenhal. That's they're searching and looking and blah blah blah, and we got to see some really really awesome shots of Harrenhal. Which I mean, that's what you were saying earlier, Micah. You were talking about the CG.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I'll link a video in the show notes. But Blue Bolt, who does the effects work, and I'm not sure if they still do for season two, but for the series, has a really great before and after video of how the shots were shot. And then after the effects were applied. And so you get to see some really cool...
like at the Eyrie, right?
Right, right. Well, everywhere. The wall, the elevator at the wall. Basically every single shot. Because, I mean, a lot of these sets were constructed, but nowhere near the grandeur that we see on the screen. A lot of the really basic things were, but you're going to see a whole lot of green screen stuff. Like I said, I'll link the video in the show notes this week. It's a really, really neat look into the filmmaking aspect. But, I mean, they obviously did that at Harrenhal because there isn't a dragonfire-ridden haunted keep anywhere that I know of. But we got to see a lot of those updates during the earlier times of Game of Thrones, if you remember, Micah, seeing because Cat Taylor was tweeting about and they were talking about the really eerie, ghostly shit that they were filming for the shots at Harrenhal. And it was pretty exciting, and it was nice to see it finished and done. It was creepy for sure.
Guys, so hey, look, I have to hate to leave you guys before I get to talk about my favorite part of the episode, Charles Dance, Tywin Lannister rolling into Arrenhal. But as it happens, I'm actually due for some to receive some people for a nice friendly game of laser tag. We're bringing the Swede back on. Just take it away, guys. I'm gonna head out to my own birthday party. I'm running late.
Well, thank you, Eric, for your blast from the past. Or actually, guys, is that technically Is he from the future since he's in the episode that's 2 days later, even though he recorded it in the past?
What?
Is this more of your space-time travel?
Yeah, right.
Listen, you guys might not know, but the listeners know right now. They do know. Well, I'm very happy to announce that this time travel has allowed us to have the Swede join us this week. How's Sweden?
Exchanging Eric from me. Sweden is great. Yeah, there's this thing that me and Eric can't be on a podcast at the same time or, you know, iTunes will implode. So it's too bad. But yeah, no, I'm good. Well, I'm good.
We didn't
Sweden
think that we'd
good.
Be able to have you, but here you are.
Yeah, again, the middle of the night, you know, really committed to this podcast, Game of Thrones. It's great. And happy birthday to Eric. Make sure he's to say it, even though he's gone.
Yes.
Definitely.
He's playing laser tag right now.
What'd you get him for his birthday, Selena?
Well, I thought I'd take a page out of Tyrion's book and, you know, go with the the gift of Joffrey, but I thought,
oh, God.
So
that was, I think that joke might be my own of the week, actually.
Really?
That's so good.
Well,
oh,
that's
my God.
Good. That's,
nice work.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about this earlier in the episode, sort of the first time you see Harrenhal. And what was your reaction to this? This really sort of creepy place that...
It looked great. It looked amazing. I mean, I personally couldn't really tell that the stone was supposed to be melted. But then you don't really know what melted stone looks like, do you? Because stone doesn't melt. So,
wait, you don't know?
You know, well imagined by them. And you can see why someone like Baelish
would
love
how morbid
the owner of it. Yeah.
Well, do you think Baelish would actually have the place destroyed and then build a new place in that stead? Let's say that Tyrion's like... trick was real, or do you think he would just live in Harrenhal?
I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him to just live there with like a few of his women.
Oh, you know Baelish, he would probably have like a couple of throw pillows, put some whores in there.
Yeah, become the
candles
new brothel.
Inside of the pillows.
Oh, right, exactly.
Guys, a haunted brothel. We just thought of the best new business. Heron whores.
Heron whores.
Semicolon, the haunted brothel. It's like Heron an whores. Adventure and a mystery like adventure while you get to sleep with the person that you are paying for.
There you go. We should start that. You think that would go over well here?
A haunted whorehouse. This is perfect.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Australia and let's open this place up.
What? Australia?
That's
it's legal. Go on.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got you.
Is it legal in Sweden too?
Is it legal in Sweden?
I have no idea. I haven't looked into it. I feel like maybe I should have.
Okay.
You need to do that.
I'm afraid that
back.
Some of our newer listeners might actually think that you're from Sweden.
You know, it's really bad. Some people have... on Twitter, and like I don't know what to tell them because, you know, the funny thing is I still don't really get the joke. Like the only thing I can think of is that you guys don't think that Denmark is like foreign enough.
Do you guys remember? I mean, I talked about it in the first episode, but it was like the second I met you in the Skype chat, and I was just like, she's got to be from Sweden. Listen to her. I knew you're from somewhere else. That sounds great,
right?
Somewhere
exotic and, you know,
right.
Foreign. Yeah,
and the fact that you take it, you know, instead of, you know, cross episodes, now you're starting to take it cross podcast. That really confuses me.
I didn't know what to say to that.
Cross podcast. That's awesome.
Yeah, my Swedenness is spreading. But you know, I'm proud to represent Sweden. I hope they're proud of me.
Oh God.
But Selena, as somebody who's read the books, how awesome was that scene where Arya starts to mention the names of the people that she wants to kill? Because it does sort of transverse the entire series, really, you know, up until where we are right now with book 5.
Yeah, I mean, that was a real beginning, you know, because we knew it was coming. It was just a question of when. And then you hear whoever it was saying, whoever mentioned the names, I don't remember now, but someone said it to her and I was like, yes, it's coming. And then she said the names and it was great. It was really good.
It was actually, it was Yoren from the night before or from the episode before.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
What was everyone's take on the, I know this happened a little later in the episode, but I think we can touch on it because we're at Harrenhal, is the torture tactics that we saw from the Lannister guards that were there.
Oh, it's so medieval.
Well, surprising.
I was waiting for a thumbscrew circa Goosebumps Tower of Terror. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah,
wait.
You do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
oh,
you
Goosebumps.
Do.
Goosebumps. It's bringing it back.
No, the rat in the bucket was a perfect form of torture.
And but can you guys explain this to me? Being men, what exactly does that torture entail?
What do you mean? Like, is it
well,
bad?
The rat has to
like,
get
what
out.
What is the torture? Like, what is the point of the torture?
Oh, well, the rat will chew and claw and eventually eat into your heart and kill you because that's the only way for it to get out.
Oh.
So I could see
I thought
it being
they threw
worse
it down
for women.
Their trousers.
With trousers, no.
Oh, God.
It'll take longer for women. Oh, God.
It makes sense, though, because, like, you're heating it up, and the rat's like, well, shit, I gotta get out of here. Have you guys ever thought about just how easy it is? Like, flesh is simple. Like, you guys eat cooked steak all the time, and that's a lot tougher than your raw flesh. And so that rat's just getting through there. It's just gonna kill you.
Yeah.
That wow. was
yeah, that is terrible.
Tickler? Is that who that was?
I think it was supposed to be the Tickler, but they never named him, and they only named the mountain, didn't they?
Well, I thought the Tickler worked with Renly Baratheon. Is that what you said? Micah, last
no, that
week?
Was a joke.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a secret spy in I might have the known Lannister camp for Renly.
He has a whole secret plot going on.
That's perfect.
You know, later on in the episode, we see Tywin Lannister finally, for the first time this entire season, show up. And you know, he just has that smugness about him where he says, what are you doing? All these are able bodies we could be using, and you're torturing them. He comes in for the big save on Gendry, and then later Arya, and this just sets up, I think, a great relationship that's going to occur when he names her his cupbearer, which is different from the books, right, Selena?
It is, and you know, that's one of the things that I sort of have been thinking about a little bit, because, you know, reading the interviews with the people who writing the show and everything, they're bringing in Rob, which I think is great. You know, they're choosing to make Arya the cupbearer of Tywin, which is also great because it gets Charles Dance a chance to play a little bit more, and we like Charles Dance. But I don't know. I almost worry some of these changes that they're making for the sake of bringing in these great actors, and they're changing the story because of it. You know what I mean?
We were emailing about it, actually, a few days ago, Selena. And I'm just going to echo what I was saying in the email, but I feel like what they're doing is... Arya, what was the name of the guy, Micah, that she was the actual cupbearer for?
It was Weiss, but I don't know if she was a cupbearer or just kind of a servant.
Right. Well, let's just say that story... I don't want to spoil anything if you guys are reading the books, but that ended a lot different than it could end if she was the cupbearer for Tywin. So not only is that sort of... story not being written into the show, but they're changing it, and I feel like I probably agree with you, Selena. I think that they're doing it for Charles Dance's sake, for one, but I also think that they're just doing it because, as far as drama goes within the show, I think that her working within the belly of the beast is much smarter, you know, it's a much smarter thing to do as far as a weekly show mm-hmm. goes. I think so,
right? And I mean, I do enjoy it because it means I don't know what's coming up. It just also makes me a little nervous because I like knowing what's coming up.
Right.
For sake of our listeners, what is a cupbearer? What's their responsibility? What I mean, is it kind of like a servant? Is it higher
like
than that?
Page,
is it
right?
Someone being groomed for a specific position? What's going on? What is a cupbearer?
Or the wine.
They wait on them at meals, yeah.
So
kind of like Lancel was for Robert
right.
in
okay.
the first season.
Did you guys who haven't read this far in the series, did you get the impression when Tywin Lannister came in, you were like, oh crap, here's Tywin, or did you think that he was actually there to save them? Because I thought the way he was acting, I was like, oh yay, he seems nice.
I thought it was awesome because I mean, I personally don't dislike Tywin Lannister. I think that last season we got to see a little bit of him, and we got to see how they're trying to portray him in the show, and that he's just an overly smart guy. He's technically, in a way, more powerful than the king. He's like, he's the guy who's, in my opinion, playing, maybe he's playing the Game of Thrones better than everyone, except he did, and he's sort of in his twilight hour and he's fading off slightly. But when he walked in, I didn't feel like he was a bad guy. I didn't feel like he was a good guy. I just felt that he was 1,000 times more intelligent than everybody in the room. And he just walks in and looks around and he looks at the jailers and he's like, all right, you assholes have been trying to play God and play around with power. You've been torturing people. Not only are you guys so stupid, but you're killing people that could be working in the fields and helping make this place less creepy and shitty. Also, that's a girl. You're stupid. That's a girl. She can come help me because she's probably not safe around you retards. Go take a shower, is what he was trying to say.
Is anyone else right. like a little annoyed that everybody keeps figuring out that she's a girl so easily? It's kind of like, what's the point of the disguise? Because everybody knows.
Yeah, because in the books, whenever she's traveling too, I mean, she fools everybody for quite a long time.
No, you're
maybe
right.
It's just because Maisie Williams just doesn't look like a boy, and they, I don't know. They don't want to insult her.
The girl that looks like a girl. Very surprising.
But what do you guys think of her? I mean, she's had some awesome scenes so far this year, whether you're talking about with Gendry or Yoren, and what's looking like in the preview of The Ghost of Harrenhal. She has a good scene with Tywin Lannister. So maybe some nominations coming her way. I know she's kind of young, but still.
That'd be sick.
She's like one of the best ones.
Yeah, maybe nominations, yes, but as far as a win, she might have a couple of seasons to go before that actually happens.
You know, I was talking about it last episode, and I'm still very much behind it, but I think that her dialogue with Yoren when they were talking about the going to before you go to sleep, talk about the person you want to kill, like, I thought that was just incredible acting on both their parts, and she's so young, it was so impressive.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other standout scenes of this particular episode was when Renly and Stannis meet on that hilltop, and they really go at it like a bunch of bickering sisters, to be honest. Not really brothers, and Catelyn calls them out on it.
I loved it. I liked it a lot, because I really like Catelyn, so I was like, yes, you tell them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the part that I enjoyed the most, was Catelyn kind of putting them in their place. You know, if you were both of my sons, I'd lock you in the tower, knock your heads together until you guys came to your senses. You know, something like that. But, you know, I really enjoyed that, because she's trying to play this kind of... She's still a mother. Catelyn's still a mother. And to see these two brothers go at it, it kind of irks her. And tell you the truth, it really irks me. I mean, they are brothers. They're supposed to be, you know, uniting and coming together instead of having this some sort of division within their family. You know, they could be... Mm-hmm. They could unite and become the most powerful force in Westeros. Well, Renly already has that on his, you know, on his own, but still.
It says a lot about how flippant they are, and I mentioned this before, but it says a lot about themselves and about the time that they live in, that they can be brothers, and really, they do love each other, because at the end of the day, they are brothers, and they would, you know, fight for each other if something bad was happening, or if the other was on his deathbed, he would be there. They're just pissed at each other, because one wants to be the king and the other one wants to be the king. So this small little argument is going to be not fought by them personally, but by all of the men that are going to fight for them. So technically, like, their fight is really about as long as the words, and the physical fight, someone else will do it for them. It's just,
mm-hmm. But I also think, like, it, as far as Stannis is concerned, like, I think Stannis just has this coldness to him. Like, Renly seems much more friendly and much more accepting, and, you know, he said the whole thing of, you know, I loved him once, and he has that sadness about their relationship, but Stannis just, I don't think he cares, you know.
Yeah,
he's
no,
just like,
right.
The throne is mine and Renly is taking it, and that sucks, and I'm going to stop him.
Well, the
and
throne
it,
is
you know?
His by right. I mean, there is some truth to that, and regardless of how nice he is, doesn't matter. I mean, look at Joffrey, who's the supposed heir, and how he treats people. It's not about who is the nicest person or the most deserving person. We're talking about bloodline here, and Stannis is the
second
oldest brother.
Yeah, but then again, bloodline, I mean, he did, you know, he was the usurper king, so...
Yeah, no, that's true.
He doesn't... That bloodline claim never struck me as being particularly strong.
So I guess what we're sitting here is, like, the same thing as when, you know, when Robert Baratheon usurped, it's a king is there, we don't want that king to be there. So basically, Renly is saying, okay, well, if it's up for grabs, I know I'm not technically in line, but I'll take it just like Robert took it. Okay, it makes a lot more sense now, actually.
Mm.
But Renly also is given the option to be Stannis' heir if Stannis doesn't have a son. So there is a good chance in war that Stannis could die at some point and Renly could take the throne.
You don't feel like he said that to be kind of a dick, though? Remember in the episode, the way he said it, he was like, hey, you can be my heir if I don't have a kid. You don't feel like he's being an asshole?
No, not really. I mean, I think it's
a
very
generous
offer.
I don't like him.
I think it's a very generous offer. You know, he could just say, you know, screw you, I'm going to kill you and take your, you know, your lands and have all your maidens and all that other shit. But he's extending the Armageddon.
Well, Renly would give the maidens.
Yeah, really.
Take the maidens.
I don't think neither of them are really concerned with maidens, honestly.
Well, I mean, it's just a general point, is what I'm trying to make here. But
it's actually funny. I mean, it's a very generous offer.
I would take it. Shit. And then I would make sure that Stannis dies, and then
no, you would not.
I sure would. I don't like Stannis.
Yeah, but if he was your bro, come on.
I can't say that because I don't have any. You know, I don't have any siblings. But right. If Stannis was my brother, you know, I would. I don't know.
What would you do, guys? Micah, what would you do if it was your brother and you were Renly?
It's tough because, I mean, wouldn't you on some level want to join your forces to his and sort of be this imposable force?
I would, 100%.
I think King's that's Landing what I would.
Wouldn't be able to, you know, stop. I mean, look at how divided the Lannister clan is right now. The only thing that's really protecting them is the walls of King's Landing. And not too many men behind it.
Well, I don't know. I'm a woman, so I wouldn't get it anyway. No, I don't know.
She wants all the maidens.
I know.
Especially Brienne. She'd take Brienne all for herself.
You would take Brienne.
No, I would join forces with Robb Stark.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There you go.
I'd be like, look, I'll join you, Stannis. You can have Selena here. No, she's great. You can.
Hey.
Oh, you got to join up with Robb Stark. He's got that badass wolf. It's like, man, I don't want to fight that
exactly.
dude.
Sorry, I wanted to bring up something really random, but I just looked up Maisie Williams. Did you know she just turned 16?
Wow.
So she's
I thought
that
she was
young
younger than that.
Yeah. So she could win some awards. Sorry, just randomly.
No. I hope she does. That's awesome.
Kind of, we'll come back and talk about Stannis a little bit later on, but we did get a chance to finally go to Carth in this episode and get a little bit more time with Daenerys. And there's this great scene where she arrives and the 13 greet her, and we get introduced to a new character. I will try not to butcher the name.
Here we go.
Get your emails ready, guys.
Looks like a character off of Tekken, but go on.
Zaro Zohan Doxos. Does that sound close?
Sure.
It sounds about right. I think it's Soan. Or Soan?
I thought it was Duck Sauce.
Duck Sauce.
Duck Sauce.
Is that going to be
his
nickname
from
now
guys.
On the show?
Duck Sauce.
Call him Duck Sauce.
We're just down for that.
Duck Sauce.
I'm down for that.
But that now there he was kind of hot.
What
I have to say, he was. It was like his whole thing of him coming in and being like, "Ooh, I will save you," and having like an Alan Rickman
he wants
kind
Daenerys.
Of accent. No, I was like, "Wow,
he wants some
that
dragon.
Was nice."
I don't.
He does.
I guess
dragon
he was.
Hell.
I don't know. I didn't.
I mean,
I didn't
I wasn't like, "Oh my god, wow!" But I was just like, after all of these people, I was like, "Oh, he seems nice. I'd go with him."
Well, that scene was good. I always kind of sigh lately when Daenerys comes on the screen. I don't know. I'm glad that they're finally out of the desert. It's five episodes in or four episodes in, right? And it's just like, I don't know. I'm glad she's out of the desert. But when I saw Quarth, I was like, oh, shit. You got to go hang out there.
Looks like a pretty sweet city.
From the outside of it, it looks like, you know, like Troy or something like that with the tall walls and in the middle of the desert. And then you open it up, it looks like the Great Valley from Land Before Time. I mean,
oh, God.
Serious. You got
Oh, that was the best reference.
You got this like freaking oasis in the middle of this desert. It's I mean, it looks like the oasis of Amsher in there.
I was watching it with some friends, and when the opening shot of the city came on, I leaned over and I was like, "And this is where they filmed Troy."
I'm like, "Where's Brad Pitt? Is Brad Pitt here?"
It's what's his face again? Sean Bean is there.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
He was in that movie, right?
No, he was not in that movie.
Wait, is he not in Troy?
No.
Yes, he was.
No, he wasn't.
No, it was Brad Pitt.
It was Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
It was Brad Pitt, Orlando
I'm
Bloom.
I'm looking it up right now.
And I can hear you Googling it, but I'm telling you, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
He was.
You're probably
right. He was in Troy.
No, he wasn't. What did he play?
IMDb. He played... Oh, wait, I'm getting to it. Troy. He's been in a lot of crap. Jesus.
He's the mean bean.
Troy. He
oh,
was.
Odysseus.
Odysseus. There you
oh,
go.
Aha.
Odysseus.
Outbeamed you.
Well,
is why you need me on the show.
Minor character.
Minor character. Wow, I feel bad.
He was not.
Well, speaking of,
I paid no notice.
Sorry, Micah. Please transition us. I feel like
speaking of
now.
Minor characters, we got to see Lancel Lannister again in a scene with Tyrion. And it was just interesting to see, again, how Tyrion is putting things into motion. He's taking control. He's making sure that his sister has absolutely... He's isolating her in a way, I think. And, you know, he uses the whole relationship between Lancel and Cersei against her now. And he's going to have a spy on the inside. And Tyrion is playing the master Game of Thrones right now.
Oh my God, isn't he? He's so smart. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's just nuts.
It's overwhelming.
It's so overwhelming. Selena, are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was it was good.
Okay. Yeah, no, I thought that was great. I think that it's a really smart thing to do, obviously. I think it was really funny calling him out because obviously Cersei, obviously she likes to sleep with people in the family, which...
Tyrion feeling left out. That's
right.
What I'm saying.
Yeah. He's good. He's got some other people. He's got now a kitchen wench, so he's good. But no, I thought it was a really great tactic to flip on him. And I was really kind of... I thought that the scene could have been set up with a little bit more of a physical blockade between the two. And I say that because if I was him, Lancel, and I was getting threatened like that from Tyrion, like a threat that could possibly lead me to dying or being killed by the king, I would just kill Tyrion. It's not like you couldn't attack Tyrion and take care of him. Did you guys think of that? Like, I know that, well, Terrence, you haven't read it, so I guess this is geared toward you, but did you think that Lancel was going to retaliate rather than just bow down?
No, I mean, just the way that he looks, and this is another credit to the casting. I mean, the dude looks... he doesn't...
Are you saying he looks like the kind of person that wouldn't carry a toy gun in his car?
He looks like the kind of person that just bend over and take it, you know? He doesn't...
He's not the Hound, that's what you're saying.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And sure, Tyrion is in a spot right now where, you know, I would be a little bit concerned because what the past couple of Hands of the Kings have ended up, you know, their heads on spikes or, you know, they're dead now is the point. But I just don't. I don't think Lancel. Oh, come on. What can
he's
he do?
He's a Lannister too. So I thought. I don't know. He's a Lannister too. I thought he was.
He helped kill Robert Baratheon.
Right. I know that it's not a popular. Like I don't know. I haven't heard anybody else say this, but personally, for me, when I was watching that scene, I thought that it was going to end with Lancel just being like, "All right, well, you're dumb. I'm going to throw you off a balcony."
Well,
yeah, but he'd die anyway.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like it's like he could possibly make a story and pretend that he didn't, you know, that he didn't do it. But if Tyrion rats, he's screwed anyway. I thought it was going to get crazier than that, personally.
But I just like how they're building up Tyrion's character. When you look at last episode with how he played the game with Pycelle and Varys and Littlefinger, and now he's going after somebody else who he finds out is close to Cersei. So it's just interesting to see how he's developing and you kind of wonder, how is this all going to play out? Like, what's his master plan?
Yeah, and you know, it's an interesting thing about the pacing of this season because I feel like in the first season, obviously, things kept happening really fast. This season, I mean, we're almost halfway into the season, and it's like every episode is slowly setting up all these things, and you just have to imagine that around episode 7, you know, I mean, shit's just going to go down in all of these storylines at the same time, and it's going to be completely manic. And right now, I mean, we've got amazing episodes, but it's all just setups, all of it.
Well,
there aren't really any payoffs yet, you know?
It's as I was saying last week, guys, and I've been saying it, you know, all season, is that the pacing is slowly picking up. Like it is in season one, we can use season one as a kind of a blueprint for the pacing on how they control the pacing of the series, and now it's starting to get up there. We're starting to get up in episodes. We're mid-season now. We can, you know, safely say that. And it's just starting, like you said, Selena, it's just building up, and then all hell is set to break loose like it did last season. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that keeps us intrigued about the series. It's like, oh, shit, what's going to happen next week? What's going to happen next week? They do a very, very great job with that.
It's almost like they're making a television show, right, Terrence?
You know what? Almost.
Wow.
But speaking of that, Terrence, I mean, that's exactly how this episode ended. And, you know, it started out with Stannis and Davos, you know, on a boat talking to each other. Davos brings up how or actually it's Stannis who mentions to Davos about how he still carries his hand around that Stannis cut off in like this little pouch. And I thought, you know, it's from the books. It's a nice touch that they were able to kind of slip that in there. But then we sort of see Davos and Melisandre head off on this rowboat towards Storm's End. And what happens next, I mean, I read it in the books, but to see it happen on the screen, wow.
My God, it was, yeah, it was crazy.
Visual I didn't need.
I knew that, like, when they were in the boat, some shit was about to happen, because she was like, hey, you want me, don't you? Like, they were in, like, she was just getting her flirt on. I was thinking, damn, like, all right.
I honestly thought that he was going to get some. That's the, I mean, because obviously I haven't read this far, but I thought, wow, Davos is going to get some. All right. And then, you know, I was thinking, all these thoughts were going through my mind. I'm like, wow, what if he gets her pregnant and, you know, she has a boy, but that's not really the heir. And, you know, while I was thinking all of that, she's sitting there giving birth to, you know, the smoke monster from Lost.
Oh, God.
Yes, what it was.
Thought I heard
the
rattle.
Did you see David Lindelof tweet about that? That was so funny.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Oh, we need to link that tweet in the show notes. I haven't seen it yet.
And what is it called in the books? It's a shadow assassin. Is that right?
I texted this to you guys. I don't know if I emailed it or if I group texted it, because we have a group text going that Selena's not a part of because she lives oceans away.
She lives in Sweden.
Right.
Excluded.
But... yes. I said it was the Shadow Vag. And that's what we were forced to see. It was it was a very intimate moment, I would say, with us and Melisandre.
When that actress first was interested in the role. Yeah, did they say to her, by the way, you're going to have to strip naked in a cave and give birth to a shadow
Absolutely
creature?
They did. But think about this. Think about this, Micah.
That's a selling point.
Her paycheck. It's pretty nice considering, you know, the amount of physical labor that goes into it. You're talking like 8-hour days of just like playing Donkey Kong Country and like going to the gym. Like, so would you do it? Would you get pregnant for a day? I would.
Didn't they make a movie like that with Arnold Schwarzenegger and
Junior?
Danny DeVito?
Junior. Did you just really bring up Junior in Game of Thrones? Well, folks, this is the premier Game of Thrones podcast on the internet. He goes, this is not a tumor.
This is not the tumor.
That's Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, shit. Well.
You're screwing up bad Arnold Schwarzenegger.
All right, well, let's link up a video of Hercules in New York when he attacks a bear in the show notes to make up for it.
I never saw that.
Well, you need to watch it because it's excellent. It's really good. I was, to get back to Melisandre, though, I was freaked out. Not like literally, but as in, oh, shit. Because I know, and I don't want to say it, because I don't want to spoil it for Terrence, and I don't want to spoil it for the listeners that are just watching the show, but I know what this means, and I was wondering whether or not they were going to show it in this episode, but as it drew toward the end, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to end the cliffhanger, and do you think we'll start next episode with the falling action from this birth, or what?
Oh God, I hope
so. I mean,
so.
There's a big falling out from that. So I suppose they could do it, but I don't know. I figure that would be an episode ender. So I was very surprised that they ended it with that, although I guess it is a pretty striking image to leave us
right.
with.
Right. Well, I think they're going to really try to build up to what happens because of it.
I just hope they're not going to build up for a whole episode before we see that. You know what I mean? Like, that would be
not.
Too much.
Yeah.
It's dangerous to have these discussions.
Well, as somebody that, you know, again, hasn't read this far, I would think it would be the smart thing to do is if they were to just let that simmer for an entire week and really not mention Melisandre or Davos or the Shadow Demon or anything
that. Yeah.
And just to let that momentum carry through the next episode. And then start episode 6, maybe with explaining a little bit about it.
Well, I guess they could just not show that part of the story until the very end of the episode and have it go that way. But I hope we're not going to have the shadow just sort of hanging out, like waiting to, you know.
Right, exactly. But waiting to become what it is. That's what I'm afraid of, too.
Well, what I'm referring to real quick is just they're at Storm's End. And the whole reason they're going there is because... and I don't know if it's stated in the show, but Sir Courtney Penrose refuses to let them in, or to let them pass, I'm sorry. So that's what I was thinking of. I Googled it. But
okay.
No, but there is that scene though in the book. I remember the scene. I just didn't remember the name of the person who was not yielding essentially and letting them pass. So there's that scene with the shadow creature, but there's also another one, which is I think the one that you were referring to. Am I right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of wraps up the overall episode discussion. There was a couple of new characters we really didn't touch on in the discussion. One was kind of there in passing, and that was Roose Bolton, who was with Robb Stark when he was walking through the battlefield. And then, real briefly, I mean, this woman that shows up to kind of go at it with Robb Stark, who is she supposed to be? I mean, we get a name for her. So she is a new character, but is she supposed to be some form of Jane Westerling?
Well, yeah, and this is another thing I'm going to get into my book book thing at the moment. I'm tired. because this is another character. There is no need to change her. Like, I do not understand. Obviously, this is, like, who are played by Una Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin's mm-hmm. granddaughter. There's a bit of info for you. But it's just like, why are they making her this like battlefield nurse woman? Like, why not just make her Jane Westerling, which is the noble lady who Robb Stark holds hostage and falls in love with? Like, why do they have to change it? I don't understand.
Doesn't really matter. She's a total babe. I think that's why they put her in.
But I'm like, if it doesn't matter, why change it? You know what I mean?
It's the sexiest amputation I've ever seen.
I cringed at that. I really cringed.
No shit.
I thought they were going to show it, to be honest with you.
I know. I was surprised they didn't show it. And Ned's head as well.
It reminded me of Master and Commander when he was taking the kid's arm off. I was like, oh, wow. All the sinew is delicious. All
right. We talked about duck sauce a little bit.
Yes.
mentioned the tickler.
All right.
Also, Polliver, who's in. He's kind of he's the guy who goes and selects, right? The individuals that are going to be tortured.
And that was creepy.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the whole thing behind that? Like, don't look at him. And then, like, I've looked at him for the past, couple of days and I haven't gotten selected or something like that. And the person that he ends up selecting, well, he was looking straight up at him.
I think it was just to represent their random enmity, like of saying, like, hey, this guy is totally heartless and he hasn't been choosing this guy, but he saw that this other guy gave a tip to the fat kid. And he was like, well, you're giving a tip. Well, I guess I'll just kill you.
So there's
no escape.
Hot pie, yeah.
Pot pie.
Perfect.
Same thing. Yeah, so, I mean, if there's any characters that we didn't discuss on this episode that we missed that were new, feel free to let us know, tweet at us. But we got a nice preview at the end of this episode for The Ghost of Harrenhal. Touched on it a little bit. We spoke about the Tywin-Arya exchange. There's also some discussion that you see between her and Jaqen H'ghar. And a couple of other really cool scenes. So next week, I'm sure, is going to be another great episode as we're halfway through the season.
God, I can't believe it's been so long.
I know. Not really, right?
I feel like we've been journeying down the King's Road on this podcast for so long.
But as we do every week, let's go around the table here and say what our own of the week was.
We also have to cut in Eric's own of the week that we recorded ahead of time, which strategically
from the future.
Should we, from the past? Should we just place it right here, right now? And so we just
let Eric go first. He's the birthday boy.
Happy birthday, Eric. Here you go.
Yay.
My own of the week is Stannis and Renly on the hillside saying, Renly says, the whole realm denies your reign. From dawn to the wall, old men deny it with their death rattle. Unborn children deny it in their mother's wombs. No one wants you for their king.
Well, I've got a pretty tame one this week, but I just had to say it because it made me so happy, and it was when Tyrion stopped Joffrey from beating up Sansa, and he was basically like, no, you can't do it, and I'm taking Sansa away, and here's my hand, and we're going to walk now, and I loved it. I was like, ha! So, yeah. It's a feel good own of the week.
I think that mine would have to be the Spice King, or some sort of royal name, the guy who got very rich off of trading different sorts of cinnamons and spices at the Gate of Karth. I thought it was great because Daenerys was at her wit's end. Her people were starving. Her people were thirsty. Her horses were dying, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he was like, hey, let me see your dragons. And she was just going to be stubborn. And I think that she needed to be stubborn for a reason because, I mean, you're Khaleesi. That's your Khalasar. You're also the rightful, you know, queen of Westeros, et cetera, et cetera. So someone sort of strong-arming you and be like, hey, well, let me see your dragons, girl. And she's like, no. And he's like, okay, I'll just walk back inside then because I'm super rich and this city's badass. And she's like, oh, but wait. So I think that that was the own of the week when he just turned around and walked away from her. I thought that was beautiful.
Mine would be whenever Joffrey was talking to the two whores in the room.
Roz and Daisy.
Oh, you can't give Roz the own to Joffrey.
No, he can let him finish.
I like whatever he said. Leave her face. I like her pretty.
Oh no! That's
terrible.
I know that was terrible. All terrible. Sorry.
Mine was really the whole exchange between Bronn, Tyrion, and Meryn Trant, and the line, careful now, we don't want to get blood all over your pretty white cloak.
Oh, gosh.
And then there was this moment where, Meryn talks about how what Tyrion was saying was a threat on the king's life. And he says, that was not a threat. I was educating my nephew.
Oh,
Bronn,
so good.
Next time he speaks, kill him. That was a threat. See the difference? He's just so damn good.
Winning.
Yeah. M slap to the 12th degree. You win this week, Micah. That was perfect.
It's kind of the same as mine, but you did the good quote. Tyrion just wins like the show. It's not even a game. He's just.
Do you think that they're setting him up for just a big letdown? Because I haven't read this far, and you guys probably know, but I feel like it's too perfect without just a big letdown.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Obviously, yeah.
Well, he is George R. R. Martin's favorite character, so I don't know if that puts you at ease or just makes you worried for Tyrion even more.
Because you know what he does? Stark is his favorite house.
That's true.
Yeah, not to go too far into that, but I was reading an interview with Martin, and he said that he didn't have any problem killing off any of the characters that he has. And I think that was in response to the criticism that he got for killing off Ned Stark. So that's whenever he said, you know, look, it's my story. I don't care what you think. I'm going to kill whoever the hell I want to kill.
George, if you're listening, I will pay you money. I don't know how much you would need because you probably are a severely wealthy man. But I will pay you money to write Ned Stark to come back, even if it's in the form of a White Walker. Just come back, Ned, please. We miss Sean Bean.
Ned is dead.
I realize this. It'll be like the same kind of thing with, like, let's bring Firefly back, but instead let's bring Ned Stark back. Let's start a campaign.
Nothing will ever happen to it.
There are some scenes where he might make a cameo.
I was hoping he might make a cameo.
Yeah.
But it's
correctly.
They saved like $40,000 not showing his head in that casket, though, so... I thought it made a lot of sense.
Oh, that's why. Of course.
Of course.
Because I was
going
to say, they could show the plaster thing, couldn't
no,
they?
But no way. No. It's still in the likeness of him. The Mean Beans agents would be all over that.
All right, so that'll do it for this week's episode. Of course, if you want to contact us, there's a number of ways you can do that. Twitter.com/GameOfOwns. Tweet at us. Let us know what we mispronounced this week. We're more than willing to... listen and not, you know, correct ourselves in future episodes. leave us a nice little note, you know, or like us on Facebook, facebook.com/GameOfOwns. Or if you're, you know, you're really feeling saucy and you want to send us an email, you can email us at contact@GameOfOwns.com. And if you haven't figured out by this point, the website is GameOfOwns.com. So that will do it for this week's episode. I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Zach Louie.
I'm Terrence Pinkston.
And I'm Selena Wilkin from Hypeable.com.
And here's Eric from the past.
So I don't know how exactly this will be cut in, but from the past, present, or future, I'm Eric Skull. Thank you for listening.
We will see you next week for The Ghost of Harrenhal.
Was it the ghostly brothel of Harrenhal?
the
ghostly brothel of Harrenhor.
Yes.
Harrenhor.
Harrenhor, right. Yeah.
we can make so much money.